From the land to Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of December 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a Global Calm Research.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll hear from Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible along the way. We'll hear another one of the elevator pitches I collected at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City last month. Today we'll hear from the Propane Education and Research Council on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll also hear our Commodity Week program, including our panelists Greg Johnson, Dave Chatterton, and Kirk Kimmel. If not, it's up online right now at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.43¾, 0.75 cents lower. May down 0.75 cents at $4.51½ a bushel, and new crop December at $4.62, down 0.25 cents. January beans $10.49¼, 3 lower. The March down 2½ at $10.59½, and November at $10.67¾, down 3¼ cents. The March in the wheat soft red at $5.09¾, up 2 for the day, and the hard red March at $5.15¼, 1¢¾ cents lower. Mike Zuzulo at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. First and foremost, Mike, happy holidays to you. Thank you for being with us and volunteering again for 2025. I don't know how many seasons you've been with us, but a very long time, sometime in the late 90s, and we appreciate all the work that you do.
I just can't tell you how much it's been a joy of my life and has been such a nice thing to do, and so many nice people to meet along the way, most of all you, Todd, and all the great people going all the way back to Joan Harshberger and all those people that we met in the early days, and all the great commodity analysts, both past and present. And just a very Merry Christmas to you and all the great listeners in Will Radio Land.
Thank you very much. It is a gift every day. I think it really is, and I do appreciate what you do. Let's start with the things that you can talk about today. What's different in the marketplace, if anything, this week than it was in the previous week or the last month?
Yeah, I will start with what most of the clients and subscribers have asked me about this week, and it's been the news breaking mid-late week. I think it was about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday that Bloomberg broke a story that China had gotten to about 7 million tons of their 12 million ton soybean import quota number agreed upon by the trade agreement. Reuters backed that up. I believe it was on Friday morning or Thursday night. But the trade just didn't want to trade that, and I think there was quite a bit of head scratching around that. My take on this is that while that is a great number and it's a meaningful number, we've seen the Brazilian southern port of Paranaguas price drop about $50 a ton since the end of November, essentially since Thanksgiving. And they're trading instead of $465 down around $415 a ton now, U.S. The second thing, and probably right along the same lines and maybe just as important, is the fact that if the southern Brazil rainfall is increasing, which it did throughout the week this week, from what I could tell and what I'm picking up from colleagues in Chicago, that would take the pressure off of the Chinese buying more. In other words, if there's more beans coming in Brazil, that means we're not going to get any kind of elongated chance to sell to them for past the month of February, March, maybe early April at the longest. But it really assures the trade that the supplies are going up, even though we've gotten this good export demand news. So that is an issue that we're probably going to have to readdress either before we go home for the holiday or right after we come back from the holiday, because we still have a question mark about Argentina. And I think the trade has really played it well by buying corn and selling beans, even though the wheat market has been pressuring the corn market as a whole. Argentina's weather outlook does not look nearly as promising. And the trade, I think, really tapped into that along with the very strong corn demand that we saw in export and record ethanol crush this week. So at the end of this week, Todd, we were looking at quite a contrast in this market where the corn was at its highest level since June, the soybeans at its lowest level, I believe, since October, mid-October, late October.
Okay, so what does that mean going forward? Because there is a battle at this point, and I don't know which of those two will lead in 2026. Do you have some estimations?
Yeah, I mean, without the wheat and the crude, and we have gotten to a point where we've made new four-year lows in the crude oil market this month. This week, the soft red wheat was able to get within under a dime of testing its five-year low. With those kind of price actions, I don't look to the market to be able to allow the corn to go higher by itself. And so what we need, along with a dry Argentine forecast, is something in the wheat and something in the crude oil market to change the dynamics so that the soybeans feel as though they have some support from the surrounding commodities. And so that's the short answer. And that's, I think, very doable, Todd, during the holiday season, just because of the thinner volume and things that are going on during the holidays typically, and the weather has been pulled up, as we've talked about in this year, by a couple of weeks. But now as we get ready for the new year holiday specifically, that's when the real weather market starts, not just in Argentina, but in center west Brazil. And we've talked about that as late as last week between both me and Eric Snodgrass on the same closing market report, which I thought was a really good one.
Yeah, so we can go back to that too, by the way. Folks who want to can find that still online in the podcast section at willag.org, or just search it out in the podcast. You can scroll back to it and find it from last Friday. I do want to talk about wheat just a bit more. If wheat needs to lead, what do we know about the Northern Hemisphere as it's related to the Black Sea, France, and maybe their demand center, which would be in the Middle East and parts of North Africa, which also raises a wheat crop? What do we know about supply in those areas?
Yeah, great question, because it is really going to be about price and supply right here as we see our winter wheat market develop in terms of a weather market. I think the CPC 30 and 90 day outlooks that came out this week, as well as the 2 percentage point increase in the winter wheat drought from the USDA coming out on Thursday, both suggest that we can have a winter weather market in the wheat. But before we get there, we need to, number one, have a low in the crude oil market, which I think could come relatively quickly, because I'm still very dubious about a Russia-Ukraine peace plan. And we do have this Venezuela oil blockade now in place. To more specific about your question is, we did see an uptick in Argentine wheat prices. They're at $210 a ton. They're usually the low ball seller out there in this part of the world. And then in the Black Sea, Odessa's wheat price for Ukraine is around $230. That's where we're at in soft red wheat right now at the Gulf. I found out through a couple different sources that the port of Odessa, it sounds as though their infrastructure has been hit bad enough that certain commodities like grains and energies, they're not doing much better than 20% shipping at this stage as far as potential. And they have, in some cases, quite a backlog of grain trucks that are on the road right now waiting to be unloaded at the ports. And so I think that's probably where the most likely scenario is that we will see with Russia and Ukraine peace deal taking both wheat and crude lower on ideas that Russian wheat and Russian crude will get into the marketplace. I would say the reverse would be the opposite. So that's what we're waiting to see, not wanting to not see peace in Ukraine and Russia, but wanting to see those prices change.
All right. Hey, thanks much. We will talk with you in the new year. I appreciate all that you've done.
You bet, Todd. Thanks. Look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzlo. He's with GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. It's time for another elevator pitch from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention that took place in the month of November. Today, we'll hear about propane.
Mike Newland, Director of Agriculture Business Development at the Propane Education Research Council. So the Propane Education Research Council is responsible for about three things. We do all the safety training and materials for our industry. We do consumer outreach, like we're doing today, and we also do some grant investment. So on the farm, typical uses for propane are irrigation, grain drying, building heat, water heat. Things that people may not think about us for would include killing weeds with propane, with fire, flame weeding. We've got projects in California using propane to create steam, to inject steam into the soil to kill nematodes and weeds for vegetable production and soon to be strawberry production. We also are really promoting power generation. There's a big Department of Energy study that came out in July talking about the grid instability and what the future looks like over the next 2 to 5 years. So we're hyper-focused right now on power generation, from running a house all the way to running your critical needs on the farm, all the way to supplementing the electric grid, all running on propane. So propane's abundant. We export about 65% of the available propane today here from the U.S. overseas. Propane's as reasonable as from a fueling standpoint. It's probably the most economical fuel that you can purchase today. And it's incredibly environmentally friendly. We don't have to have containment. We don't have to have any spill prevention type scenarios. So we've got a very environmentally friendly fuel. It's very clean to burn and very cost effective.
For those who are wondering, there is a difference, of course, between natural gas and propane. Propane is denser and it has more BTUs per cubic foot. Natural gas is delivered to at lower pressure rates than propane. And natural gas is primarily methane. While propane is a heavier hydrocarbon, it burns much, much hotter. On that note, when I turned 16 in 1980, my father bought a brand new GMC short bed pickup and said, "It's yours on the weekend. Keep it clean." A month later, he had it converted to propane. That pickup had about a 1,500-mile range. I could drive to Florida and back if I wanted without pulling into a gas station because of the 80-gallon propane tank in the bed and the gasoline tank combined. One of the things of note is that propane burns really hot and really clean, and that meant that when I changed the oil in that pickup every 3,000 miles, it looked nearly as clean as when it went in to the engine. I suppose I was driving a hybrid before hybrids were cool. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
Okay, so spring's arrived because the winds came in. Man, did they blow. Oh, wait. Yeah. No, the winds did come, but it's not spring. Tell me about what we've been going through the last couple of days.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, though, Todd. Like, spring 2025 was one of the windiest on record for much of the central U.S., and it was a time period where there was just all sorts of conversation about major risk on for the summer growing season because of how windy it was in March, right? We was like, oh gosh, are we getting ourselves into a problem? And so we asked now, we've just watched over the last 3 to 4 days, I mean, just ferocious winds, Todd, like Mount Hood over in Oregon. I think it's Oregon. Is it Oregon or Washington? Oregon, I think it's in Oregon. 142 mile an hour wind at the top of the mountain. And then we saw gusts over 100. We've got fires in Colorado. Good luck flying out of Denver today. It's going to be, I don't think you will. It's so bad. And then last night, those winds that just ripped through us were a part of that first system that dropped our temperatures 40 degrees in one day. So we're feeling that spring-like chaos, but now here it is, and we're just a few days away from our official, you know, astronomical start to winter as we almost approach the solstice. And by the way, Todd, good news is with the solstice, we're going to stop losing daylight hours. We're about to make the rebound, which is, I don't know, I find encouragement in that. Do you?
I do. This is the time of the year we lose minutes so fast of light, yeah, and we gain it back so quickly that you know it every day that it's getting longer. And it's just that first month or so is just fantastic as the daylight continues to lengthen out. I really do love it. And I make note of it every year. So let me think about this. So big winds and winter's coming. The solstice is here. Dropped like a son of a gun last night. Although apparently that's not going to stay that way. We're going to warm up.
No, I mean you'll see the sun a lot as it slowly starts to gain these minutes here and then takes off. because the pattern is such that we just parked a massive ridge over the middle part of the country. So if Santa's going to have a problem, it's going to be in California this year, trying to get through the West. It is not going to be in the Midwest, Todd. I told my son this morning before he went to school, he's like, hey, Dad, like, what's Christmas going to be like? White Christmas? I'm like, no, except for the fact that your white legs are going to be in shorts. That's about the only thing that you're going to see, because it's, you know, we could climb out of the upper 50s, lower 60s as we approach the end of next week. And so it's going to be very mild and relatively dry. It's going to be great for travel. So that is a plus, at least on that side of it. But if you like good winter storms in this year, you need to go to California to witness theirs. All the action is in the West. And we think we're going to hang on to this mild stretch. I mean, it might be here all the way till the start of the new year. But Todd, just like it did in November when it was so mild, when the pattern gets this kind of amplified and gets so blocked up the way it is, it's blocked up in Europe, it's blocked up in the North Pacific, it always crashes out of it. And when it does, it'll be crashing in the kind of coldest time of year, which will be at some point, I think at the beginning or middle of January. So we're not done with winter by any stretch, but we're going to go into Christmas with some pretty darn nice weather in terms of warm temperatures. But if you wanted snow, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go like Marquette to see it.
Yeah, so I was thinking, and I believe Trent Ford said this in his weather forecast and review this morning. Mm-hmm. Two things. Mason County had a 60-mile-an-hour wind, interestingly enough, and that we had been 10 to 15 degrees below normal before we got the warmer weather. So, which brings me to what you just told us about amplification. So if we're really nice and warm over Christmas and winter break for 2 weeks, I feel like January, if it turns cold again, could be a son of a gun.
It could, and I really don't care, because the best thing about this warm-up is all that snow we had on the ground melted slowly. That water is now in our soil. We've made a recovery on what has been an extremely dry year in central Illinois overall. I mean, really, it just rained in, you know, June and July when we needed it. That's what really saved the crop. But when it does break, it'll break pretty hard again, and it's fine. We've got a recharge of soil moisture. Let's go ahead and freeze it in there and keep it all the way until, you know, end of February, beginning of March. I'd be fine with that. But you're right, it will change, and the Climate Prediction Center suggests that it will once we get into January. And one of my top analogs now is 2018. And 2018 did something similar to this as well. And then in January, it just crashed over cold once again. And I think that that's a possibility going forward. By the way, another analog year that I've got is 2009. So a couple of interesting ones starting to show up with the rapid collapse of La Nina, which we're all expecting to start taking shape in the new year.
Anything else on the long-range forecast here before we turn to South America?
Yeah, I would just say this. There are indications that spring 2026 could be on the drier side of average. And Illinois, we're fine with that. We love that. That's more open, not completely wide open windows, but more open windows to get a crop in. And as long as the rains come back mid to late June and then are there in July, we tend to have bumper crops in those years. But I just want to let folks know that we've had some forecasts from previous springs where I'm like, hey, tight windows, tight windows, tight windows. If you ask me to just talk about it now, even before the new year starts, I think I see chances of maybe things opening up a little bit differently into 2026's growing season. So, that's just one thing to think about.
Speaking of growing seasons, we should take up the South American crop, both in Argentina and Brazil. Start with Brazil, please.
Yeah, well, I got a text message from our friend Matt Bennett the other day, and he's like, so is it really that big? And I was kind of like, what are you talking about, Matt? And I'm like, oh, the crop in Brazil. Okay, now I know. And so we start talking about it, and the reality is they got some key rains in the last 10 days. And this is like us getting that desperately needed rain in late June and early July for some of the crop that's been planted, you know, early or on time. And so the next couple of weeks, I would just say don't really matter, even though it's going to get a little drier east. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. And I was just talking with a group of our economics team at Nutrium. And we were just looking at the NDVI data. Mato Grosso right now is setting a new record high in NDVI. So that tells you how good that crop is. And that's why I think they're probably going to start to see some adjustments back up. And I don't do crop estimates like this, but I'll talk about it. I wouldn't be surprised if we start hearing something close to 180 on a national production number, 180 million metric tons out of Brazil in soybeans.
That would be the first time they've ever reached that number. That's a big one. How about in Argentina?
Argentina struggled earlier, but we've gotten better and better news and watched, you know, watch radar and watch satellite and seen some better moisture get into place. So from Cordoba, you know, over to Santa Fe, back down to Buenos Aires, that's a really important triangle down there. I think things are good. And northern Argentina is going over wet. And that's very atypical for a La Nina. So this kind of tells you that maybe this La Nina, which looks strong now, is going to fade fast like it did in, you know, some of those previous years we just mentioned.
Okay. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you not next week or the following week, but in the new year, I think probably on the 8th or 9th, something like that.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
The same to you, Eric. That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. And Dagrable joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.